I'm Stephanie Overbuck.
I'm Mel Wymore.
And this is Pot of Gold.
In the fight against climate change, sometimes even the simplest actions can seem complicated. It's not easy being green. But what if we could offset our carbon footprint with the simple click of a button?
In this episode, we are speaking with Harry, one of the founders of Selva. Selva is a platform that allows you to calculate your carbon footprint and then easily offset it by funding the planting of trees. We let Harry elaborate.
Hi there. Thanks so much for having me on today. I'm particularly excited because this is the first time I've been interviewed on a podcast. My name is Harry, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of Selva, which is a reforestation platform.
Okay. Wonderful. So what does that mean? What's the purpose of a reforestation platform, and how is it any different than plant your own trees or something like
that? Okay, so I gave you the very brief intro. I'll go into the much more detailed one now. So Selva was set up to enable all of the people out there who want to do more to do more. There are millions of people who feel like they should or want to take more climate action, but they don't know what to do. They think it's too expensive. They don't know who to trust. They think that whatever they do can't make a difference. All these sorts of things are blocking people from taking more action. Meanwhile, on the other side of the equation, we have this amazing technology, which has been around for billions of years, that has been proven to take CO2 back out of the atmosphere. And we obviously have a big CO2 problem. That technology is, of course, the tree. So Selva was born out of the need to connect all those people that care with a carbon removal solution that really works. And we want to break down those barriers of knowledge, inconvenience, trust, to connect people with the world's best reforestation projects. Reforestation is, until recently, has been an overlooked tool, I would say, in our pursuit of climate solutions. Often more in favor of the slightly sexier, higher tech solutions like direct air capture and biochar and things like that. But actually, we're focusing exclusively on reforestation because it's beautifully simple. It's a technology that's here today. It can be deployed at scale, and also it's much more affordable than some of the other solutions. So we wanted to focus exclusively on reforestation as our means of getting people engaged into climate action. And so the way the platform works is we ask people a few questions about their carbon footprint, where they live, how often they fly, drive, dietary habits, those sorts of things. And then we can get a very good idea of their personal footprint. And we can say, okay, Mel, your carbon footprint is 10.2 tons of CO2 every year. We can offset this by planting 32 trees a month, and it's going to cost you $4.55. And then every month we plant those trees for you, and you can track the number of trees and count them over time and that sort of thing. So we wanted to try and create a really easy but engaging way of getting individuals involved in climate action. So that's what we do. The origin is actually a little bit ironic. And I used to work in the oil and gas industry. And when I tell people that I'm working on an environmental startup and that I used to work in the oil and gas industry, they think, well, how do you square those two things? But it was actually my time in that industry that made me understand how deeply entrenched hydrocarbons are in our current economic system and how widespread they are. And unfortunately, emissions are not going away anytime soon. Hydrocarbons is not just planes and cars and lights. They're everywhere. They're in our medicines. They're obviously in our plastics. The food on our plate and the clothes on our back is all a function of hydrocarbons. So given this, and given that there are parts of the economy that are extremely difficult to decarbonize, we need to think of ways that we can start removing CO2 from the atmosphere. And that's why the focus on reforestation. So yeah, ironically, it was time in the oil and gas industry that pushed me down this path. And I think it gives me quite a unique perspective. the climate debate is often a very polarizing one. It's often a very emotional one, and sort of means though that I'm rejected by both sides of the debate. I'm rejected by the hydrocarbon debate for being way too dismissive of the benefits of hydrocarbons, but I'm also rejected by the environmental side of the debate for supposedly being a hydrocarbon stooge. But actually, I like to come at it from a more pragmatic point and be realistic about what we can do as an economy in the years ahead.
So from a practical perspective, can we solve the CO2 surplus with just trees? Is that something we can do?
No. I think the key thing with the climate challenge in general is that it's going to require a whole mosaic of solutions. No one solution can do it on its own. That's for sure. It's such a big challenge that we need all available solutions on hand doing their bit. And I think one of the big issues, another big issue with the climate debate, is that we're letting perfect be the enemy of the good. And we're saying no to solutions, or there's a lot of public pressure against certain solutions because they're not perfect. And this is holding us back. It's often counterproductive and sometimes can make the situation worse. So I'll give you an example. I think one of the best ways we can reduce CO2 emissions in the short term is by getting rid of coal and power generation. But the best way to do that is through gas. To do that with gas, we need to invest into natural gas. And certainly in the climate circles, this is a very unpalatable idea because, hang on, you're saying we need more fossil fuel investments for decarbonization. But we've seen in the UK, the UK's reduced its CO2 emissions by about 30% by doing just this. You have gas and renewables as a combination. Anyway, so we need all these solutions, and trees are just one of that. We estimate that the forestry can provide about 16 or 17% of all CO2 abatement needed by 2050, along with renewables, along with a coal to gas switch, along with energy efficiencies. And actually the great news is that we have all these solutions today, or most of them. We just need to execute and deploy. Some of the more high-tech solutions around direct air capture, we don't necessarily need them. If they work, great. But we have the solutions today. We just need to all get behind them and deploy and execute.
So the way it works is someone signs up, you do a carbon assessment of their footprint, and then they pay you, and then you plant a tree. So where do you plant the tree? Like, what logistically, how does that work? Where do you plant the trees, and do you have the land to, like, just how does it work?
Yeah. So our aim was to get as many trees in the ground for each dollar. So we thought about focusing on local projects. And because most of our target market is in Europe and in the US, we thought, okay, well, maybe we should plant trees in Europe and the US. The problem with that is it's, of course, a lot more expensive. The land is more expensive. The labor is more expensive. And also trees grow a lot slower up in the Northern Hemisphere than they do in the tropics. And if you're thinking about carbon sequestration, you want trees that grow quickly. So for that reason, we focus mainly on sub-Saharan projects. And I'm not out there planting the trees myself. We partnered with three amazing NGOs, reforestation NGOs, who are doing the planting on our behalf. And one of the places we plant the trees the most is in Madagascar. And we plant mangrove trees there. Mangroves are amazing at absorbing CO2. They absorb about 4 or 5 times more and store 4 or 5 times more CO2 than traditional sort of land-based forests. And they grow very quickly, and they provide a whole host of other benefits, like restoring the fisheries and tourism and these sorts of things. So yeah, in a way, we're the sort of intermediary between these NGOs and individuals who want to take more action. And I suppose where we're trying to differ is we're trying to make climate action, trying to make it engaging, we're trying to make it cool, we're trying to make it sexy, and tap into people's desire to help that way.
So you pay the NGOs to plant the trees?
We take 15% of every subscription to keep our lights on, and then the other 85% goes to the NGOs, yeah.
But you're a for-profit.
Yes. Yeah. Although it'll be a long while before we get there. And we thought when we were setting that up, we thought long and hard, okay, maybe we should set up as a social enterprise or an NGO ourselves, but enable to access outside investment, being a for-profit company means we can get that outside investment easier and then grow and then scale our impact a lot more.
Well, I'm intrigued by that. You know, is it really? I mean, you say you thought about this, whether you go for the for-profit way. Maybe let's dive into the community on the community level, right? Because if you come in with the money in, you said, Saharan or let's say third world countries, basically, right? Which unfortunately, that climate zone is mainly third world countries from an economic perspective. So you come in with money to plant a tree, and that makes a lot of sense for community first, I think. Yeah, you get money to plant a tree. But then if the community starts to rely on that income, what would happen to the tree? So, are you long enough in the business to know that what will happen to the tree? Or how do you track what will happen to the tree? Because I think in this kind of economic model, the tree would be planted, but then also cut down in order to get another tree planted. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And it's a very valid concern. And it's a question we get a lot. It's like, how do you know that the trees are going to be there for the long run? And the most important way to ensure that is by working with the local communities and creating the right financial incentives for the people on the ground. So for example, local communities are paid to plant the trees. They're also paid to protect the trees once they've been planted. They also can generate additional income for communities through, as I mentioned, fisheries and through tourism. Another project, a reforestation project that we partner with, they educate and support local farmers to grow forests that yield fruit and veg. And that fruit and veg can then be used to eat and also sold to make an income. So the communities have a greater financial incentives to protect the tree for the long run than they would to chop down the tree and use it as firewood, for example. So you're right, it's a very key issue. And it's all about those sort of incentives on the ground, because that's really what matters.
Yeah, it's like within the monitoring process, right, where you know, as a sort of traditional model, you chose, you give money in order that other people do something, which exactly, where is the incentive for them to actually make it sustainable? Yeah. And the other part of this model intrigues me when you say make climate change look sexy and cool. Like as someone who uses, is it really that we use, how should I say this? Is it convenient? Is it just convenience? Like, why would I use a platform, or why would I not just go and like look up in Google who is planting trees in, you know, I don't know, mango trees or whatever you just set as an example, that all my money will go there. Do you understand what I mean? Is there anything in there for me that your platform gives me, or is it just the convenience factor? Is it just cool and sexy? I never heard that climate change is cool and sexy. I kind of like that, you know, so we're like, oh, climate change is coming. Anyways.
Yeah, the convenience factor is definitely one. The other factor is that we've sort of done the vetting process for you. If you went onto Google and said, okay, how do I take more climate action? You're going to get a million different hits and you'll be overwhelmed by the amount of information. So we're trying to become a reliable source for that action. So we've done that vetting. So you know that if you're using our platform, that your money's going to the best of the best in the reforestation business. So that's the key thing. And also, I guess the personalized subscription and the planting a specific number of trees for your own footprint is a way that we can make it more engaging too. The sort of the carbon offset calculation is a way of connecting people personally to the trees.
Can I track my tree?
Not yet. We are looking into all sorts of cool tech ways to both track the tree and monitor the growth of the forest. So for example, you can take a satellite picture of a forest today and then another satellite picture of a forest in a year's time, you can then use some artificial intelligence to analyze both pictures and say, okay, that forest has grown there. Oh, wait, hold on a second. It's shrunk there. Maybe there's been some deforestation. You can also analyze the density of the canopy as well and use that to make an estimate of how much carbon has been absorbed. All these things would be near impossible or extremely time consuming to be done manually. So there's a lot of exciting developments going on in that space, which goes back to your question, Mel, about longer term tracking of the trees to ensure that they're still there. Technology will help unlock a lot of this.
I would be interested in creating an NFT for my tree.
Yeah,
I'd buy an NFT and then
trade it on an NFT market.
Yeah, no, but I would be interested in keeping it and getting all the information. How's my tree doing? You know,
yeah.
Is it being now the meeting tree of the community? Which is, you know, there's a lot more to trees than just the carbon thing. So I think especially for communities in the third world countries.
Harry, I'd like to go back to your past, your dark past in the energy industry.
Yeah.
In the evil empire.
Well, I'm actually quite interested in your perspective. You know, we all want to do, I think your premise is correct. I think everyone is overwhelmed and everyone would love to make a personal contribution to the situation that we're in, right? To improving the situation. And I think that's really true. On the other hand, there does seem to be very little change in the corporate environment that's not driven by some profit structure. And obviously, many companies will catch on that consumers want to make a difference, and therefore they'll make some accommodation to green because people want to buy green now. But that's still the same old model. It's still the same old corporate model that does ultimately just be just take its direction from profitability and not from assessing larger impacts. And so I'm wondering what your experience is in that industry. Is there any possibility of some kind of shift in the modeling or some more systemic level shift where corporations are really thinking about this more deeply and maybe changing the way they do things?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think big oil and big gas, big energy gets a very bad rep. And often that's justifiable. But having spent time working in that industry, there are a lot of very good people at very senior levels who care a lot about the environment. And I think we're too quick to lay all of the blame directly at the door of these big energy companies. You know, they're people who work at these, they have kids, they have grandkids, they really care about the environment. And it's not as simple as saying that these big businesses are responsible for all the damage. And actually, part of the messaging that we're trying to promote at Selva is that society is made up of individuals, and us as individuals, we all have a choice. It might seem like we're helpless, but ultimately we're a consumption-based economy, not a production-based economy. You know, if Apple turned around and started making, I don't know, gym kit for hedgehogs, no one would buy it and Apple would go bust. You know, if you and I stopped buying the products that oil and gas companies, for example, produce, these companies would go bust. It might feel like we don't have a choice, but we do. We've just got so comfortable with the luxuries that they afford, you know, and that's sort of the reality. You know, either we don't want to use these projects, we don't have to use these products. We can step out of the sort of the house that hydrocarbons built, but it would be cold out there. It would be dark out there.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, yes and no. There's a couple of key differences, right? The corporation is liability free to a large extent. It has, you know, even though there's good individuals there, the overarching motives are fairly without consciousness. They're basically very pure motives of let's make a profit. And also I feel like the consumer is very, like we've seen numerous times in product liability history of tobacco being pushed and pharma being pushed and certainly energy being pushed where to the point where consumers are actually trained to think this stuff is good when it's actually not good. And I feel that the while I understand there's good people in the energy industry by itself has not really moved the ball on climate change.
Yeah, of course. There's a lot more that needs to be done, and there's certainly a lot of mistakes have been made in the past. There's no doubt about that. I think sentiment is shifting, but the difficulty is doing it in such a way that doesn't make the problem worse. You know, so a good example of this is the divest campaign and big companies being forced to get rid of some of their dirtier assets. The big problem with this is that, we'll take BP, for example. Recently, they sold some oil fields, I think it was in Alaska, because they're really dirty, heavy oil fields. And this isn't the sort of asset that they want on their books because they're coming under real scrutiny for their ESG credentials. But they go and sell it to a private player. That private player is not held to the same level of scrutiny and probably cares less about the environment. So does the environment end up benefiting from that? Who knows? I would argue probably not. There's always going to be some private money or maybe some foreign government money to buy up these assets. So there needs to be a pragmatic approach to it.
But that begs the question. I mean, BP could make those clean oil fields, or they could actually just stop production and hold on to them for 1,000 years. I mean, I feel like why wouldn't BP start planting trees all over the planet instead of you?
Some of them are. I guess they did. BP had a bit of an issue. They planted some trees and the forest went up in flames. I think, I can't remember where it was, but so that was a big mess up for them. Yeah.
So have you begun this process of plan? Has your startup started to do the actual work?
Yeah, we launched about 6 months ago now, I think. Before that, we're working on it for 6 months or so. And yeah, we're live, we're up and running. We've planted, or I should say financed the planting of, because as I said, we don't plant the trees ourselves. But we have planted over sort of 30,000 trees, I think it is now. And beginning to get the message out there, beginning to get some traction. And it's exciting. We think that people understand and will buy into the idea. Like, and I'd want to stress that it isn't a substitute for reduction, of course. And that's the criticism often raised against offsetting is people are just using it as an excuse not to do anything. Of course, it's much better if the CO2 doesn't get there in the first place. And we would always encourage people to do what they can to reduce their footprint, but we have to be realistic about how much people are willing to do. You know, we've all known about climate change for a long time, and it would help if we all lived off grid and naked and vegan, but most of us don't want to do that. You know, there's only so far we're willing to go. And actually Selva started out of my own desire to look for more. I reduced the amount of meat I was eating and sold my car, this sort of thing. But then I was like, okay, well, what else can I do? I'm not willing to take the really radical steps to reduce my footprint, but I know by simply living, I have this impact. What else can I do?
Why is that? Why can't we solve all carbon? Why couldn't we just offset everything? Is it not feasible to do that? Or is that I don't know the math. Could you tell us the math?
So I think at the moment it would be basically impossible to offset everything. It's a good point, though. The end goal is decarbonization, right? Rather than necessarily getting rid of fossil fuels, for example, it's about decarbonization. So we need removal as well as reduction. So removal isn't about getting rid of fossil fuels; it's about getting rid of the CO2 that's already in the air. Whereas reduction is about stopping the fossil fuels and the CO2 from getting there in the first place, which is predominantly from burning fossil fuels. But no, there's not enough land. And this goes back to your question earlier, Mel, about can trees do it on their own? No, there's not enough land to offset the entire global emissions with just planting trees. And we would be the first to say that that's a bad idea. As I mentioned, we need to have a selection of solutions. So these two levers need to work together. We need to reduce where we can. And there's a lot of low hanging fruit with electrification of vehicles and energy efficiencies, and even in the food industry. These things are fairly easy wins, but then there are much harder things to decarbonize, like cements. Like the chemical process of creating cement is responsible for about 5% of global CO2 emissions. Aviation, heavy shipping, all these sorts of things are going to be very difficult to decarbonize. So we need to find ways to offset those for as long as the emissions are still being emitted.
What about your organization or plans for the future? Where do you see yourself going?
I suppose ultimately the big picture, the big vision is to try and become the global sort of champion for reforestation, to bring tree planting into as many aspects of daily life that you could imagine. So every time you buy a coffee, we're going to finance the planting of a tree. Or alongside your likes on your Instagram page, you've also got a counter of the number of trees that you've planted. This sort of thing. We want to show people how affordable it can be, how easy it can be, and really get it right at the front and center of the public conversation around climate action. In the meantime, there are several steps to get there, but the technology approach that I mentioned, we think will really help give people the extra assurance about the longevity of their trees. And in the nearer term, as mentioned, all about the messaging. We're trying to refine the messaging, trying to figure out exactly what works and what resonates with the sort of the mass market that we're going after. You know, we know that there are those who are particularly passionate about the environment. Those aren't the people who we're necessarily going after. We're going after the people who they like to travel a bit. You know, they might like to eat some meat, this sort of stuff. So we need to find a way of connecting with them. So the messaging is going to be key. But no, we're super excited about what the next year is going to bring. We have big plans. We want to plant 10 billion trees. That's our big picture goal. So I don't know, 10 billion minus 30,000. We've got a long way to go, but
10 billion trees. And are they? Do you have already? You know where they're going to go already?
Not all 10 billion. Not all 10 billion. But the bad and also the good news is that there's a lot of space to plant trees because a lot has been chopped down. So I think we've lost about a third of the global forests since the last ice age. So there's huge amounts of space to plant trees. And a recent estimate done by a university in Switzerland, I think it was, estimated that there's 900 million hectares of available non-agricultural land that wouldn't interfere with human activity around the world that's suitable for reforestation. And to put that scale into context, it's about the same size as the US, the entire US landmass. So there's a lot of room for trees. And if we ever get to the point where we've run out of space for the trees, then that'll be a very good problem to have, because it means we planted a hell of a lot of them. So
for sure.
I hope I reach that problem one day.
Absolutely. It amazes me that you could plant 10 billion trees and cover the land of the entire United States and still not solve the carbon problem. That's actually quite astonishing to me.
Yeah. I mean, the carbon problem, it's the biggest challenge we face as a species. So, and it's a particularly difficult problem, because not only have we got to get the current CO2 emissions down to zero or net zero, but we've also got to get rid of all the CO2 that we've emitted over the past 150 years. So to undo all of the damage. So it's a bit of a double whammy. But we think trees can do it. They're natural, they're simple, and often simple solutions are the best. So
outside of mangroves, are there other trees that you would recommend? And in particular, in urban environments, are there types of trees that people could plant, you know, through your platform or even on their own, that are especially effective?
The key thing is is the, or the line often given is the right tree in the right place. And so it's very dependent on where you are. One of the problems that tree planting initiatives have seen in the past is non-native invasive species come in and get planted and create these huge monocultures, which creates all sorts of issues. They bring in disease and kill other local trees, or they can mess with all the water. I think eucalyptus are particularly bad at that. They grow fast, but they take a lot of water, so they can create issues there. So it's heavily dependent on where you are, to be honest. In terms of carbon, trees in the tropics grow faster. But if you're thinking about planting a tree, look up the native trees to where you are, and then you can't go too wrong with that.
You know, the tree is such a nice metaphor for that. For example, our generation is planting trees, but we are definitely not waiting for the next generation to enjoy the shade, you know, or the harvest. That we have to have this immediate harvest, and so, which is basically called profit, right? So there is a connection, there is a link to the invisible engine, which is in the background, and that is basically tied to the money system. I think we could dive. I like your model, but there are a lot of questions coming up, and I think it's intriguing, this whole thing about convenience and lip service, actually, too, you know. And at the same time, we are running out of time, man. You know, it's not that this is a new problem. And climate change is there. And as you know from your presentation, what I've seen is I think you have this air photo where you can see the damage. You take a trip, or wherever we go now, I think by now, you know, it's kind of crazy. Right? And any beach we go, there's some plastic. And then you think, oh, finally, I've escaped. And then, woo, there's a plastic bottle kind of floating by. You know? And that's just the status of our planet. And sometimes I'm amazed of, are we just putting this responsibility to the next generation? Think I was hoping for my parents to solve it. Like, now it's on you to solve this. Like, here it is. Yeah. And like, we are degrading. And how can we stop all it? And I think there is something in there, what you do, which is helping, which I think tackles these multiple problems. But we can, as I said, I think we can do a whole new episode on a specific topic, which for me is also the quality of trees. Yeah, are you planting an oak tree to pine forests, a monoculture, to diversity, and all of, you know, interesting topics.
Yeah. So you're the validator, basically. You're the certifier.
Sort of. There are other companies focusing more on that than us, and particularly in the business, the B2B market, companies focusing on that. But we're less on the validation side of it. But there are other companies working to create that structure and create that additional validation. Yeah.
Understood. I think this is great.
Yeah.
So you are Selva. If someone wants to assess their carbon footprint and plant trees as offset, they can go to your website.
Yes, which is welcometotheselva.com. Selva.com wasn't available, sadly. And Selva means jungle in Spanish. So so welcome to the Selva is welcome to the jungle.
Great. Harry, do you have any passing wisdom or final thoughts that you'd like to share with our audience before we wrap it up?
I think what I'd like to say is that Selva was based on the idea that each one of us can make a difference. Like, every single big achievement and every empire, every war, everything big that's ever happened has always started off with an individual thought and an individual mind. So I think I'd like to express how powerful each one of us can be. And particularly if all of our individual actions are combined together, then we can create a real difference. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to create impact through the power of collective optimism, the power of lots of individual actions combining to make a real difference.
Great message.
So Harry brings up an interesting way of planting trees. And he's very specific when it comes to climate change. No, it's a very specific sector of planting trees.
Oh, he said, if we planted trees everywhere we can, it would be easily the size of the United States. And even if we planted trees across the entire land of the United States, it would not be enough to solve climate change. And I think that's a really profound statistic or whatever observation that, you know, he admittedly is saying, hey, I'm this small piece of this small puzzle planting trees to cut carbon, but we have so much more to do. And so for me, what's hopeful about this interview is that he's one of many people trying to make it easier to do the right thing or to do something toward fighting climate change. Hmm. And I think we recognize that that is kind of a drop in the bucket, but it's an important drop. And if, you know, many drops makes an ocean, so to speak. We want many more people developing applications, developing ways to make it easy to behave differently.
I mean, it's kind of, I think it plays with our guilt in the West that we all know that we have a sort of disconnect with nature and that there's something going wrong. We all love trees somehow. I mean, like the amount of posters you see, you know, with calendars with trees and this tree and that tree. But do we actually care for trees very much, you know, apart from in our parks? That is kind of an interesting relationship, I think, we have in our Western society, especially with trees. Yeah, they're kind of beautiful. We admire them. We adore them. But do we really respect them? That's a different question. So I think this app and the thing or the platform Selver is trying to solve or create is dealing with this kind of guilt I think we have in us. We know something is going wrong. We want to offset it. We want to make it right. Interesting that we can't get it right.
Right. Well, and it doesn't really change us from creating that wrong. It's an offset, right? It doesn't stop us from saying, well, we shouldn't maybe pull all those trees out of the ground in the first place. Or, you know, but maybe it makes us more conscious about trees and about nature and about our bad behavior.
Well, it really kind of depends what kind of trees you're planting, right? I mean, as a metaphor, if you're planting in our culture, we do plant very fast-growing trees because then we cut them down and, like, produce some stuff with it. While in other cultures, you plant a tree which is then basically for the next generation because very, like, oak trees, for example. You know, there's no way you can plant an oak tree and, like, see it big in your own lifetime. So it will be your children or the children of your children who then actually can admire this wonderful ecosystem of an oak tree. It's a very different mindset.
Yeah.
And we in the West live in this mindset of, yeah, let's do it quickly. Let's grow it fast. The wood obviously is not as good because it grew very fast, right? It breaks very easily, but then we can produce stuff out of it. Isn't that great?
Understood.
And make some money.
Yeah, so maybe an additional feature to complement the Harry's app is to encourage people when they donate the planting of a mangrove in Madagascar to also, you know, think about the trees in their lives and, you know, appreciate that or plant their own tree in their backyard or just really connect somehow beyond just clicking the button, but also relating to the trees right in front of you.
Well, I have to add that, you know, in our neighborhood in New York, there is this, whenever a tree gets planted, and by the way, we can't choose the trees, it's the city who chooses the trees, and they are choosing the trees according to air pollution. So trees are, in big cities now, planted, whatever trees, and I think it's ginkgo actually mainly, this is the main reason why so many ginkgo trees are, I'm not quite sure if it was ginkgo, but anyway, some tree is actually helping us clear the air. Well, good luck with that, but, you know. Anyways, that we can't choose the tree which is planted, but I've seen these little notices like, oh, this is the new tree in your neighborhood, like don't, what does it say? Don't pee on it, basically. You know? So That's so nice to treat a tree. You know, it's like, well, can we give it more respect? I for sure, yeah. Yes. And I think we can also plant more. Even though if we would go into Central Park and plant a tree, I think we would get into trouble.
That's New York.
We are an independent, listener-supported podcast.
For the price of one latte per month, you can help fuel our work and keep our content untainted by commercial interests.
For more exclusive content, join us on patreon.com or click donate on potofgold.world.
Thanks to our producer, Riley Paul. I'm Mel Wymore.
And I'm Stephanie Overbeck.
Thanks for listening.